It could just be me, but I am having a hard time believing that this is the fifth Sunday in Lent, which means that in just a week's time, we will arrive at Palm Sunday and the beginning of Holy Week. Can it really be that Easter is only two Sundays away? In any case, given that we are moving close to the climax of the season, it's probably good that we have a scripture like this morning's scripture to tune us in more closely to that part of the narrative that is just around the corner, the narrative of Jesus' suffering and ultimately his death. Because we are not far off from that remembrance. In the seasonal order of things, we still have Palm Sunday upcoming, but along with that, just past that, suffering is coming. Death is coming. So in the scripture text for this morning, Jesus is in that preparation mode. He is preparing himself and he's preparing his disciples for what is coming. And what is coming is death. That's pretty blunt, I know. But that's what's coming for him. And his death is coming. He knows his death is coming because of the actions he's taken, the life he's lived, and because of the sense of non-worldly identity and purpose that he carries within himself. That is, he has identified himself as one who is completely accountable to the grace of God and not to the inequity of human institutions. And so he has lived his life in a way that challenges the religious and political leaders and institutions, that challenges the purity code, that challenges the insider-outsider distinctions and values of culture and religion. And that means that he has crafted an identity and a reputation as a troublemaker, a thorn in the side, because he's functioned as a moral mirror, someone whose life and example shines a light on moral corruption and hypocrisy. People look at him and listen to him, and they are compelled to see themselves more truthfully. His presence reveals self-justifying inclinations they have to judge others, outsiders especially. And his teachings call out the idolatry and the greed of those who have prized positions in the culture. He's a mirror into which they look to see themselves more clearly and more honestly, and some of them, those with the most to lose especially, don't like what they see. By the time we get to this point near the end of the gospel narrative, Jesus has repeatedly challenged the system along with the many assumptions that are built into that system, assumptions about superiority and inferiority, about how to exercise power, and about who deserves the best. He has broken bread with and spoken well of those who are rejected and even hated. He's treated women and children as people and not property. He has healed anyone and everyone who has asked for healing, and in doing that, dismissed purity as a prerequisite for compassion. He has refused to turn away the sinner. And through his words and actions, he's empowered the crowds and enraged the powers that be. He's been a disruptor, and social and religious systems, and especially people within those systems who benefit from things staying the way they are, don't like disruption or challenge to their power or their position. In fact, they resist such disruption with intention and with intensity. But Jesus just won't stop saying what he says and doing what he does and being who he is. And this determination, this character, this calling is what is, at this point in the story, pushing him toward a death sentence. But here's the other thing, too. At least some of the people, and maybe even quite a few, who agree with his challenge of the political and religious elites, with his challenge to all that oppresses, are hoping for a Messiah who will lead a political and social revolution. This may be some of what is happening on Palm Sunday with the crowds who enthusiastically cheer for him as he enters Jerusalem. They want someone to lead them in overthrowing the Roman occupiers, overthrowing these occupiers through whatever means necessary. And to their way of thinking, such a Messiah shouldn't be predicting his own death and calling that glory. Because everyone knows that a Messiah should be predicting victory. Everyone knows that glory is found in victory, in crushing the enemy through power and force, not through acting with self-sacrificing integrity and acceptance. But here in this morning's scripture, we have Jesus saying things like this: "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour." It is clear that Jesus is keenly aware of his fate. He knows that death is coming sooner rather than later, that he has to do what he has to do to keep being who he is, and that God's glory isn't going to be the same as the glory of a military Messiah. In short, he knows that he, like a grain of wheat, must fall to the ground and die in order to bear fruit. The fruit that comes from never, never turning away from love. Love of God, love of the outcast, love even of the enemy. Now, there are people who say or indicate in other ways that they are perhaps ready to die. For example, some are people who have lived a full and long life and are now tired as their bodies decline and wear out. Another example, some are people who believe in a cause with such fervor that they are willing to pay the price, willing to die in order to achieve their ends. Often the latter are people whose fervor is motivated through an intense emotion or a reaction to some offense or injustice. Sometimes people are seeking revenge and fall into that category. Or maybe someone is willing to die to protect their loved ones, but strong emotions are involved, and often some kind of anger. I would rather die than let you get away with what you have done. You can't win. You can't defeat me. I will die before I give in to you. But Jesus is different. He is passionate, but he is also non-resistant. Jesus doesn't fight to the death or even against death. He is strong and he is determined, but his determination isn't self-justifying. It doesn't condemn others, even others who seek his death. And I think this is important to say. He does not condemn his enemies. He uses the word judgment. In this very text, he says, "Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out." But fighting against isn't what he's interested in. Taking the lives of others in order to preserve his own isn't what he's interested in. What he's interested in is restoration. putting things right. So he says, now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. But that's followed immediately with these words. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. Do you hear that? And I, when I'm lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. So Jesus predicts that he will fall to earth like a grain of wheat, dying, falling into the earth, surrounded by the earth, the soil, in order that his life, the new life to come, might bear fruit. The fruit of restoration. Not atonement, but restoration. That's the drawing all people to myself. And restoration, we all know, does not happen through a continuing cycle of violence. Restoration happens through the faithful adherence to the principles and practices of love. And love requires nonviolence. Love requires an accepting and expansive embrace of others. Love requires a willingness to die to self-interest and sometimes even self-preservation. Love is expansive. Love of God, love of neighbor, love of self, love of the outcast, the other, even love of enemy. In dying for the sake of what he lived for, this expansive and reconciling love, Jesus draws all people to himself. His death does this. His character in facing his death does this. It testifies to a new way of being, perhaps a new kind of hope. Is it necessary? At some deep level, we know that in order for us to have a chance at a different world, a world where things are made right, where some people aren't subjected to starvation while others watch from a comfortable distance, a world where children aren't killed by bombs, and sexual violence isn't employed as a means of terror, that if we want a world where humans are going to be treated humanely, then hate can't be met with hate. And trauma can't be a justification for revenge. And strength has to be internal strength, not the exercise of power over another. The cycle has to be not only broken, but something new has to be modeled and demonstrated. Crucifixion itself and all it stands for can't be killed. You can't crucify crucifixion. The means of death can't be killed. The power of death has to be overcome, endured and overcome with sacrificing and transformative love. God's desire isn't to exact a punishment for sin. God's desire is to draw us back home in transforming and recreating love. If you doubt that, just listen to what the scripture is saying. Listen to what Jesus is saying. Here's Eugene Peterson's The Message version of verses 24 and 25 of this morning's scripture. Listen carefully, unless a grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world, it will never be any more than a grain of wheat. But if it is buried, it sprouts and reproduces itself many times over. In the same way, anyone who holds on to life just as it is, destroys that life. But if you let it go, reckless in your love, you will have it forever, real and eternal. Jesus did not hold on to his life. He did hold on to his integrity. He held on to his purpose, his calling, his commitment to justice, to renewal, to reconciliation. He stayed true to himself, recklessly committed to love for all people. That was the most important thing. Even more important than avoiding death. I am following a story of a friend of mine who has been on a cancer journey. She's close to my age. She has hundreds of friends who are closer to her than I am. But I am close enough that I feel feelings of sadness, concern, admiration, and anticipated grief for her. The cancer has advanced again in her brain. So just the other day, she took to social media to tell her wide circle that she is stopping all forms of chemotherapy and will turn to palliative care. This is what she said. In Canada last week, I had a moment of great clarity for chemo, and I was feeling so good. No pain, no nausea or vomiting, no burning pain in my feet, no headaches, no trouble breathing. I had energy, appetite, and my thoughts and conversations were clear. I couldn't remember when I had last felt really good, really like myself. While at the bookstore in town, a book jumped to my mind, With the End in Mind by Catherine Mannix, a hospice doctor. I devoured it. It was filled with her stories of guiding patients gently toward a comfortable death shaped by patient choice and dignity. It spoke so deeply to me, and I was filled with happiness and peace. That feeling has not left me since. I have decided that my priority is a better quality of life, even if that life is shorter. I want to feel good, awake, fully alive, and most myself. I've been so encouraged by the consistently positive and life-affirming responses I have received from everyone I have shared this with. Life is not permanent, but it is good. And then she quoted the author of the book. Quote, "It is in fact a truth that almost all the people we have the privilege of meeting toward the end of lives are extraordinary. They tolerate their symptoms with courage. They adjust their hope from avoiding death to embracing each day as death approaches. They let go of the tyranny of planning and worrying about the future and simply bask in the present. These people change the center of their world from self to others. They focus on loving their loved ones, but that kindness also beams onto everyone else around. Appreciation, concern, and gratitude. And we bathe in the light of their beneficence." The comments that flooded her media post were sad, admiring, loving, affirming her beauty and strength, hundreds of comments. Two caught my eye. One friend said, "You are bigger than this world." And many affirmed her for being so clearly herself. Integrity of identity and purpose, being one's self, even in the face of death, especially in the face of death. Love and light in the face of death. If that isn't powerful and beautiful and transformative, I don't know what is. That was Jesus' path. Is it ours? Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit.